Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be
good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, feel free to write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Tonight, before I introduce my guest, I want to make a couple of announcements. First of all, here in Philadelphia, it is a bright, sunshiny day, and this is a big day in Philadelphia for football fans because the Eagles are playing in the final playoffs before the Super Bowl. And right now, this hour, they're winning 21-7. So in Philadelphia, it's a very bright, sunshiny day, even though it's nighttime. And aside from that, I want to talk to you about my upcoming healing weekend. That's only a couple months away. Very excited about it. It's going to be in Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. It's going to be a wonderful weekend with some new women coming, with some past veterans of the Gay Husband Straight Wives War joining us. Some therapists will be there to do some workshops. And it's going to be a very exciting healing weekend. I know that all of these weekends that we attend are very healing for women, or start them on their journey or continue them on their journey. Because as you all know, that when you're going through this, there's nobody who can understand this better than a straight wife. No one who can understand this any better. And one of the wonderful guest speakers we had at one of our healing weekends in Texas a few years ago is my guest tonight, my dear friend, Patsy Ray Dawson. Patsy, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. I'm excited to get to visit with you this evening. I'm glad you've got sunshine because it's dark and cold here.
Oh, I don't get it. You're in Texas. It's supposed to be hot.
Well, I'm up at the top of Texas in the panhandle, so.
I've been watching all the Texas weather. It looks really worse than here.
Huh.
It really does. I didn't expect this from Texas in the wintertime.
Right.
Is that where you are? Is the weather bad also, Patsy?
There's no moisture, but it's cold and windy. The wind got up to 30 miles an hour today.
Wow. That is rough when you're not expecting it. Well, like I say, for us, it is a bright, sunshiny day. It reached 52. So for us, we've had such a frigid winter that 52 is hot. And we're really happy that the weather is getting a little warmer for this week. It has been horrible for a lot of people around the country. But, Patsy, you know, before we even get started, maybe you can confirm to me, you know, you came as a speaker to one of our sessions when we were in Texas for our healing weekend. And don't you think it was a very valuable experience for the women who came there?
Oh, yes. You could just see the healing going on all weekend. And, you know, people had a chance to talk. And you could see it in their demeanor and their posture, but you could also see it, hear it in their words. And it was noticeable to me on that first night when we kind of all got together. There was a lot of people acted very timid, very hunkered down. And by the time the weekend was over, people were being bubbly and just coming out of their shell. And I thought it was a very healing weekend for everyone.
Yes, I think that when you're going through this particular situation, because you've worked with a number of our women, you know how isolating it feels. And the reason why I really appreciate you so much is because you're a counselor for people who are Christians, which is sometimes a different dynamic than other people. I mean, this is a hardship for many people, but as Christians, you're really challenged because many of my Christian women are taught to believe that marriage is a holy sanctuary, and no matter what, under any circumstances, for, you know, richer or poorer, for better or worse, for sickness and health, you got to stick with it. And that's how they're brought up from the time they're little, and they think that that's the way religion tells you to do it. But you are somebody who feels very differently, and you've been working on that for so many years, so maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, Bonnie, we've talked a lot about people saying, "Well, I made a vow, and so I'm stuck," and that is a huge problem for Christians because when they go talk to their pastor or their elders or their preachers, that they don't get help. It's just, well, go home and be submissive, and the Bible doesn't teach being submissive to sin. The Bible teaches us to expose it. And so they're trapped. And you and I have talked before about the kids. The children are penalized and are harmed by this too. So it's not just a decision that affects the wife; it affects the whole family. And in thinking about going to be talking to you today, I told you I love talking to you because you ask me these questions that I don't know the answer to, so they stay in the back of my mind, and I'm trying to, okay, how can I answer this? What's the answer for it? And I've been thinking about this vow business. I got married over 50 years ago, and times have changed, and my husband and I wrote our own vows, and we promised in our vows to have sex with each other. And I thought, you know, since we wrote them, what are people promising now? And what I learned, what I did, I went on to Wikipedia and searched on marriage vows. And then I went to a marriage chapel in Oregon that had the modern-day wedding vows to just see what people are saying. So when you quoted the vows just a little bit ago, you left off the first part of it. Let me read it. It says, I, the person's name, take you, whether it's the husband or the wife, to be my lawfully wedded husband or wife, and then here's the vow, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, until death do us part. When my husband and I were writing our vows, we had some other vows that we could look at and get ideas from. And he wanted to have this to have and to hold in there. And I said, what does that mean? I was this sweet, innocent, naive little thing. And I said, what does that mean to have and to hold? And he says, that means we get to have sex. And I thought, wow, that's what I'm looking forward to in marriage. That sounds good for me. And in fact, having sex to me is one of the main reasons to get married in the first place. So in our vows, we pledged to have sex with each other. That was an important part of that. So when I went to Wikipedia, what I found was, going back to the Roman Catholic Church, their Book of Common Prayer back in 1549, and it shows other religions, the Anglican religion, other religions on Wikipedia, they are all basically the same. The vow I just read you is from 1549. And the book was revised in 1980, and it was revised in 2000. And to have and to hold is part of the traditional wedding vows that everyone gives. Now, if they're a modern person, and, you know, of course, people can write totally different vows, but these wedding chapels have models for you to choose from. And this wedding vow, wedding chapel, had five vows you could choose from. And what they did on their standard traditional, they left out to have and to hold. They changed it to forsaking all others, be faithful only to her or to him. We tend to think that forsaking all others just means not to have, they're not going to commit adultery. What that means is you're going to be devoted sexually to your mate so that you're forsaking all others. So it's, even there in the more modern vow, has sex right there, a promise to be sexually available and loving to your mate. And then you see some of their more modern ones. It says to love her faithfully. I see to love her faithfully quite a bit. And then it will say, I further promise to love you without reservation. And so the modern wedding vows and the traditional ones, all of them promise to have sex. That is part of the vows that they make. And God is teaching all the way through the Bible. Right now I've been keeping a list, this new medical discoveries and things will come out. I'll see something and I'll think, that applies to sex. And right now I've got a list of 21 reasons in the Bible of why God wants husbands and wives to enjoy passionate sex. Sex is really important to God. And we have to keep in mind that a lot of our traditions surrounding divorce back when our Bibles were translated into English, they were translated by scribes and who took a vow of chastity. And you can go on my website, or our listeners can go on my website, and in the sidebar there is a bookshelf with a bunch of free materials there. There is chapter three from my book, God's People Make the Best Lovers, about the victims of Victorian morals. And I talk about these guys, their attitudes toward women. They viewed women as, with the devil because they're tempting them to have sex, and they've made this vow. And so they were living in a real unloving, very harsh, emotional environment. And when they translated our Bible, sometimes some of the words they use are ones that are not friendly to women. They're not friendly to marriage. But yet, if you look up the words, we're not limited. If we look up the words, we can still know what they mean. So it wasn't that they were changing the passages, the words. They were making them harder to understand, and they were bringing in their prejudice. So a lot of our views of divorce come from this attitude that that people at this time had, that even lawful people, lawfully married couples, would not engage in sex. They just had such a horrible attitude. Some of these monks thought it was a sin to see your body naked, so they would not take baths. And when they would walk down the road, the bugs and stuff would just fall off of them. So there's an extreme attitude toward marriage and towards women behind a lot of our views toward divorce, that we just do not appreciate how much God loves passionate sex. It is His the crowning act of creation for him, and he designed it to bless us. It releases all kinds of hormones. If you've got a sexually active couple, then when they're involved in the good and the bad and the rich, the richer and the poorer, all of these things, if life is handing them a negative experience, if they've got a healthy sex life, then they are getting hormones that help release that stress, that bind them closer together, make them more loving, help them create a very affectionate environment to raise their children in. So a healthy sex life makes all these three conditions that we normally think about. That's my vow. A healthy sex life makes those bearable. And so basically, another point I would make along this is everybody who is in a sexless marriage, who's a Christian, dealing with the New Testament, they know about 1 Corinthians 7. That 1 Corinthians 7 is where the Apostle Paul said that the husband, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband, and the husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but her husband does. It takes a man to give a woman sexual pleasure. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. It takes a woman to give a man true sexual pleasure. And then he says, stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time so that you may devote yourself to prayer and come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So every Christian, I would be willing to guess that every Christian listening to you and I talk knows about that verse, and it's one that they puzzle about. It's one that they maybe causes some resentment. They feel cheated. And I'd like to suggest to our listeners that this verse is saying that the kind of sex God expects a husband and wife to have, the qualifying thing here is that they are to have enough sex, they are to have frequent enough sex and quality sex so that they are not tempted to commit adultery. And basically what I would say, if you are not having enough sex so that you're having wet dreams are a gift from God. That Song of Solomon talks about the Shulamite having two wet dreams. And wet dreams are a gift from God, and wet dreams are our subconscious speaking to us, telling us things about our innate sexual desires and sexual needs. So if you've got a person that's married to someone who is depriving them of sex, they may be mentally making all kinds of excuses. He had a bad day. We're under financial problems right now, and he's worried. And they may be making all kinds of excuses, but their subconscious, where the wet dream originates and comes from, is not buying that. And what will happen is the person will start having wet dreams about somebody else, or they may be somebody that doesn't have a face or a name. It's just that, well, my husband's not available and my body's not desiring him because I know he's not available. So one of the tests you have whether or not you're having enough sex is, are you having enough sex so that your wet dreams center around your husband or they center around your wife? And if they don't, then you're not having enough sex. God says you need to have more sex, and I expect you to have more sex. That is the duty of marriage. Part of the duty is that you are there for your mate sexually enough that they don't have wet dreams that are taking them away from their marriage partner. And also,
Let me ask you a question before you go on?
Okay.
And I didn't mean to tell our listeners before they started listening that you are a counselor for Christian people, and you have found, you've studied this for years and years, verses in the Bible that will tell you whether or not, you know, what people are thinking. But your points of view aren't necessarily always accepted by the church, because I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying that at all.
Right,
I'm just saying
right.
that When I have women who come to me and they tell me that their church tells them, you know, sex is for the purpose of recreating or procreating, and that, you know, their husbands tell them that it's not supposed to be something pleasurable, but they're telling me that they're learning this in the church. How does it get so thrown out of proportion from two very diverse points of view? Where were they coming up with this stuff from?
It's what I just started off with telling you. It's from these monks who could not marry, who took vows of celibacy, and in order to survive, they had to look down on women because, in fact, some of these monks thought that they could not see a woman because it would arouse these sexual desires that they were being taught were horrible and sinful. There's a story of one monk who had not seen his own mother for years because she was a woman. And this has been passed up through the centuries without people stopping and saying, hey, I've got a brain, I can read, I can study, I can look up word definitions. And what I tell people is you have to do your own studying. The Bible is there for us to study and figure out for ourselves. And when we let somebody else do our own thinking, you know, they may not have the same motive of searching for the truth. They may just be, well, this is what I grew up with. This is what I've always heard, and they just parrot it. And we have so many hang-ups in this country about sex that people, you know, for me to say that God loves passionate sex. In fact, I contacted one lady that I wanted to do some PR for me, and I said, this is who I am. This is my message. And she said, the Christian world will not stand for that. And so, unfortunately, that is true probably the majority of the time. But your women are thrown into a position of where they have to start thinking for themselves and start searching for answers because they're living in an environment that 50 years ago, 40 years ago, when I started doing some of this teaching, the thought that a gay man would marry a straight woman did not enter our brain. You know, we didn't even conceive of it. So they're in a situation where they essentially are being forced to get out of the box, to start studying, start thinking for themselves.
And I think that your words are very revealing. In fact, I just had a message from one young lady, Debbie, who met you at our healing weekend, to please send you her love because your words truly inspired her. Do you remember Debbie?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Debbie from Texas.
Yes.
I know that she's one of the people who, you know, we talk about who was so inspired by your words because she grew up in that strict Christian environment where, you know, her husband ruled the roost and whatever he said went, no matter how distorted or how ridiculous it seemed. But when you're brought up in an environment of male supremacy and whatever, you know, you're told you have to do, and the number of churches, you know, do espouse this because I've heard it from so many women from all over. And not just churches, all kinds of religions. You know, like I say, a lot of times women are just second class and when it comes to sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an instrument for men who will tell you that the purpose of it is for them to be satisfied, not for you to be satisfied. And I think it's so discouraging when I hear these words because I think of all these poor women who are part of my network who are in bad marriages because they have gay husbands who cannot perform sex with them because of the fact that they're gay. That's not to say they don't start out by performing, and I call it a performance, that they can function that way for a while they're in their 20s. But as they get older, you know, that sexual need becomes stronger for who they really are, for men, and they just can't keep it up. And when they're so influenced by the church that, you know, homosexuality is a sin and, you know, they're just brainwashed in that from the time they're little, they're never going to admit that they're gay. They're just going to keep torturing you. And, you know, when you want sex, you're just not going to get it. And, you know, they'll come up with all these millions of reasons blaming you that you're the fault, that why we're not having sex. You're either too sexually aggressive, or the fact that you're, you know, not good enough in bed for them, or all kinds of horrible things like you don't smell good or your breath is bad or your body parts are bad, anything to humiliate the woman so she won't be asking for it anymore. And
right.
This is not what marriage is supposed to be about, correct?
That absolutely correct on that. And one point I might make, as you know, Bonnie, I don't know if your readers know or listeners know, some of them do. I have a survey that's been out since August of 2016 on sexless
uh-huh.
marriages, and you've talked about it on the radio program. It's been in your newsletter, and I think I've had maybe about 8 or 10 of your women who have taken that, because I have a place there asking, how'd you find out? And so they
uh-huh.
say, found out from Bonnie Kay about this. And then I can tell from their answers that they're women who are married to gays, straight women married to gays. And in there, I have a section questioning how are they doing emotionally. And some of this
uh-huh.
I picked up from you, from your newsletter, like you're always talking about how their feminine spirit is crushed. And so
right.
so I have that on there. And men take the survey too, so I'll have, is your masculine spirit crushed, your feminine, your spirit, has your soul, how you feel? Your soul has been killed, you're drowning, you're fighting for emotional survival, you can't think straight, you don't know what's true anymore, you're emotionally exhausted, you never rise to your full potential as a spouse, you never rise to your full potential as a parent, you never rise to your full potential as a Christian, you never rise to your full potential as a worker, you're extremely lonely. In looking at the answers, I've had hundreds of people respond now to this survey. And in looking at the people, how they fill out this, how are you doing emotionally, your women check more items than anybody else does. It is
uh-huh.
so obvious looking at the way people have filled this out that women straight women who are married to gay men are suffering more emotionally than a straight woman married to a sexless straight man is, and more
uh-huh.
than a straight man who is married to a sexless straight woman. And one thing that caught my attention on this, there's two questions in here that your women nearly always fill out that the other people, that the straights don't fill out about their straight spouse. And that is,
uh-huh.
you can't think straight, you don't know what's true anymore. And, you know, you talk about in your newsletter about the gaslighting.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's where this comes from. They are so their gay husbands are so expert at gaslighting and twisting the truth and stuff that these women reach a point where they can't think straight. They don't know what's true anymore. They've lost their touch with reality in a certain sense just because their husband is blaming them. And of course, the straights blame their straight spouse too. I mean, that is typical clear across the board. But the way their femininity is attacked and the degree to which they are attacked and blamed and have the
uh-huh.
truth twisted is so extreme. These marriages, from what I'm seeing, are extremely brutal on a person's emotional nature and their self sense of self-worth in the way that they are torn down. So,
which is part of the reason why it's so much harder to recover from this type of marriage than from a straight marriage. And I think that you can see it from the answers that in a straight marriage, you know, they always say in life that it takes two to tango. There's two sides of every marriage. You know, sometimes you just have a mismarriage or a mistake or a mismatch. But these marriages are doomed from the beginning because even though it's not a two-way street here, it's a one-way street, and it's only going the gay way. And you cannot possibly be a fulfilling husband if you're a gay man. That's not to say you're a bad man. You're just a gay man who can't be a straight husband. And these men just don't want to give it up. They just want to stay there. They don't have the, you know, guts to go out and say, this is what I am. You know, they're so confined into themselves. And part of the time, I really do blame religion for doing this to people because they're taught from an early age that you cannot be gay. And if they would come out, then, you know, they have all these, you know, hang-ups about how it's going to affect everything around them. And I do understand that, but you don't sit and torture a woman over it. You know, a lot of times, Matthew, you know, what men do is they say, well, you know, we're victims of society. Okay, I get that. I really do. But then you go and you take somebody who's innocent and who's loving to you, and you pass that victimization over to them. So here you're taking someone you supposedly love, and you claim you're a victim. Well, you at least knew what you were. But when you got married, you couldn't be honest about it, and you're living all these years lying about it. And, you know, my heart goes out. You know, I have a woman in our group from Texas. She's on my support group, but she's part of my network for the last, since I started. And, you know, when she was a young girl, you know, she got married, and she was very naive, you know, and she didn't know the ways of the world, you know, like a lot of women our age, you know, really didn't know.
Right.
And, you know, she didn't know much about sex. She only knew what she heard. You know, she didn't really know. And my heart broke for her because she told me that one time she came up with an STD. And, you know, she was feeling sick. She went to the doctor, and they told her she had an STD. And she went and told her husband because she didn't know where she got it from. And he was screaming at her, blaming her that you must be cheating on me. And, of course, she wasn't cheating on him. You know, he was cheating on her. You know, he was a gay man having sex with indiscriminate men. And then coming back and blaming her and punishing her for it. I mean, these are the kinds of situations I deal with all the time for men who just can't do the right thing because they're too selfish, and women who are not educated enough. But what I would like for you to discuss, Patsy, is that, let's say theoretically, now you know your husband's gay. Now, according to the Christian, you know, belief, from what you tell people, divorce is allowed, correct?
Absolutely, yes, yes. And basically, let me kind of find my notes here. Basically, it's taught in both the Old Testament and the New Testament that God, like I say, God designed passionate sex. He designed it to bless our lives. In fact, I've got an article on my website, Three Reasons God Wants You to Love Passionate Sex. And he's built in all these hormones to help you be a better parent, to be a better worker, to be a better Christian. These hormones are to bless our lives, and they're to glue us to each other. When a man is having regular sex with his wife, their bodies release and share hormones, and these hormones literally glue him emotionally to his wife and to his children. So having regular sex with his wife, with the man doing that, it helps him love his children more. It helps him be a better parent. And the same thing is true for the wife. Sex is a very important part of marriage. In fact, God says more in the Bible about having a good, happy, successful sexual relationship than he does any other area of marriage. All the other areas of marriage, subjection and leadership, which is where the churches hang up, they preach that until they go to an extreme with it. And they're so timid and embarrassed. Some of them are afraid to say the S-E-X word, so they don't deal with it. And they're teaching men a sense of entitlement. They're teaching women to be codependent. And that is so foreign to God's view of the way a man and a woman get along together when they are having frequent quality sex. Because we don't appreciate that, we go to these extremes. But in the Old Testament, I was trying to find the verse here. Just a second. Okay, in Exodus, and the reason the verses are important a lot of times to Christian women, if they can go read it for themselves, then they're going to believe it because God said it, not because Patsy or Bonnie said it. They're reading it for themselves. So in Exodus 21:10 is where it talks about that if a man takes a slave girl to be his wife and then he marries someone else, she has three rights. There's three rights of marriage. One is food, one is clothing, and the other is sex. And if he marries her and then he decides he's going to have another wife and he takes another woman to be his wife, he cannot cut down on how much sex he's having with his first wife because he's got a second one. And the passage is very plain about that, that sex is a right of marriage. And I know you like to call it lovemaking, and really that's what it should be. It should be quality sex. Somebody laying there doing their duty is not quality sex. It is not satisfying for a man to have a wife just laying there letting him do his thing. And it's not satisfying for a woman, for her husband to just get it up and do a few quick thrusts and he's done. That's not quality sex. And that's not what God is talking about. So anyway, if he is unwilling to do that, then she can divorce him because of that. And the Jews were not hung up on this. Back in the Old Testament, they were not hung up on sex being a duty, a right of marriage like we are in this country. And in this, you know, a lot of times when I read things about other countries and sex, I think we probably live in one of the most sexually backward countries on the face of the earth on some of this stuff. And basically, I think, and we talked about this the last time you and I talked on your program, about that the Jews recognized that a woman could divorce her husband for that, even if she were a slave girl. And the idea is if the lowest person in our society can divorce for this, then that means a free woman could divorce if her husband wasn't there for her sexually. It means a man could divorce his wife if she wasn't there sexually. And the Jews had all kinds of rules about this. Okay, what's enough food? What's enough clothing? How many times does she get a new dress? That sort of thing. And then they also had rules for how much is enough sex before you can divorce. And one thing I might say, people say, well, women couldn't divorce in the Old Testament. That's true. They could not go to court and divorce, but they could go to the elders of the land and say, my husband is not there for me sexually, and I want a divorce. And the elders would go and pressure him to divorce her. So when somebody says a woman can't do that, technically they're right. But yes, the women could get the men behind her. And the men, see, the Jewish men, you don't see this in the churches today of where the elders and the preachers would say, well, let me go talk to your husband. He needs to be there for you sexually. They're embarrassed. It's rare that that happens. But the Jews understood a woman's right. My understanding is that the Jews thought that the woman was the more sexual partner than the man was. The Song of Solomon is a woman's voice. It is a woman's story. It is a woman teaching the world about sex. So the Bible over and over portrays the woman as the more sexual partner than it does the man, which is the opposite of our view of it. And so the Jewish elders, they came up, and the scribes and the Pharisees came up with their little rules about sex, that if you're going to divorce your husband for not enough sex, here's what we think is not enough sex. If your husband is unemployed, you should expect to have sex every day with him, that he's there for you every day. So, you know, that is a huge argument for being a sugar mama. You know, take some fella in. So, anyway, that's what was expected of him. If he was a worker, got out, and he was a laborer, he was expected to have sex 2 times a week. If he drove a donkey driver, he was expected to have sex once a week. And part of that is probably because he was on the road. He wasn't always home. Camel drivers would be gone even longer, and they had to be home so they could have sex at least once a month. And then sailors, once every 6 months. You needed to come home every 6 months. Then scribes, they were once every 30 days. I don't know, you know, why they were given 30 days. But anyway, they had these rules, and we talked about this the last time I was on your program. And I have the link to that on my website. And one of my one of my clients, a male client who's dealing with a sexless wife, listened to that radio program because I have it on my website. He has a friend, an elderly friend, who is a Jewish scribe. Scribe may not be the right word, but anyway, he's an elderly Jewish man in the Jewish church, and he said he went and had lunch with him, and he said, "What about this?" And the guy just started rattling off this little list, like I just read right here. He rattled it off word for word, and he said, "In your marriage, you have scriptural grounds to divorce your wife because she is not there for you sexually. She is she's denying you this right, and when she is there, when she will permit you to have sex with her, it's mechanical." And you know, one of the questions I ask in the survey is, sex mechanical? And in all these sexless marriages, when sex takes place, it's always mechanical. I don't recall anybody ever not checking that it was not mechanical. And so it's just somebody, when I talk about sex is a duty, and we think that that can just be somebody, you know, just laying there doing their duty. No, that doesn't work, because 1 Corinthians 7 is, the sex has to be good enough quality to satisfy you so that you're not tempted to commit adultery. And mechanical sex does not satisfy anybody. It may take care of some of your hormonal needs, but it does not satisfy you emotionally. It leaves you empty. It leaves you lacking. And so the Jews understood this, and they didn't have this hang-ups. And I read something the other day that the Jews, that we have records, there's lots of historical records of people getting divorces during this time, so that we can go back and see that, yeah, this is the way they understood it. This is what they did. And it seems like I read something just here the other day that said up until maybe 75 years after Jesus died, there are records of the Jews divorcing because there was not enough sex.
That's really interesting. I'm going to have to read up on that, but I have not heard that before, but I certainly will research it. But we did get a letter in that somebody would like for you to address this too, Patsy.
Okay.
Because I'm listening now, and I have a question about the religious part of it. I agree that religion is a big contributor to the problem. How can we as Christian women of faith help our husbands come out and be brave and accept themselves for who they are? I don't think it helps to call them dishonest or cowards or mentally ill or sinful. That just makes them hide even more. What can we do to help them come out and live honest Christian lives of who they are?
I don't know if I know the answer to that, Bonnie. I think that's you're talking to a lot of these men. I think that's something you're going to know the answer better than I am.
I think it is a problem, and Anna wrote this in, and because there are so many consequences by the church who make this into a sin, which is not exactly, you know, much that you can do about it this time, you know, as far as, but I mean, there are churches out there that are very supportive of gay, and I think that maybe my advice to you would be to find one of them, like, for instance, Dr. Brian Hooper, you know, who used to be a regular on the show, who's now a semi-regular. You know, he's a great person to ask that question to, because he is a minister and he is gay, and he's with a Protestant church. And he may be able to give you some better ideas than me, because I'm not Christian, or Patsy, who believes in a, you know, different way. But
right.
You know, Brian's very gay-friendly, so and he knows a lot in church about acceptance of gays. So if you need that information, I'll be happy to send you his information, and hopefully he can help you with that. Once again, there's so many different diversified Christian parts of the community and so many different beliefs. So I guess, it's help that you need, right?
Yeah. And Bonnie, some of your women think they have to have proof that he's gay before they can divorce. And and that is not true. They do not need to have proof that he's gay. All they need to know is there's not a proper amount of sex. And the reason there isn't, you know, you go back to the slave girl. It gave us one reason there that he's married another wife and he's not, so he's not giving her due. But when you think about it, it's the reason, and the Jews didn't feel like there had to be a reason because people were divorcing because of not enough sex that were not slave situations where he married a second wife. So in these situations, all you know is there's not enough sex. And there in 1 Corinthians 7, it says you abstain by agreement. So you're talking about it. There's something happening like the camel driver. He's out of town. No way you can have sex. So there has to be some understanding for abstaining. And when he comes home, okay, it's going to be like a honeymoon and we're going to maybe not get out of bed all day long type thing. So it has to be by agreement, and you're praying to solve that problem. So it's out in the open, and you're discussing it. But take the situation like we're talking about. It's not a slave situation. It is a one-on-one marriage to two free people, and there's not enough sex. Okay, you don't know if he's having sex with somebody else. You don't know if he's masturbating, having sex with himself and draining off his energy. You don't know if his attitude has gotten so bad that he hates her and he doesn't want to have sex with her. So basically, all they know, they don't know the reason behind. They don't know if he's gay. They don't know if when he has sex with her, it's mechanical because he's visualizing her as a man, which I've read in one of your books, Bonnie, where you've done some interviews. That's where these guys say that. She doesn't know. She can know that, well, he's always got his eyes closed, and when she tells him to open them up and look at her, he squeezes them tighter than ever, because she's interfering with what he's visualizing. All she knows
That's
is there's not enough sex. That's all she needs to know, and she has scriptural grounds to divorce him. The Jews
understood
that.
I'm going to even go one step
that.
Further, Patsy. I'm going to go
okay.
one step further, because I know you and I may not agree on this particular point of view, but I don't even think sex has to be the only issue. I think if you're unhappy in a marriage, and that if you're not being appreciated as being a wife, if your husband's emotionally berating you, if you're having physical violence against you, those to me are reasons. If you're not happy in a marriage, staying where you don't belong is not the answer. You need to move on and not have to wonder about it. Because in life, you know, you make a lot of decisions when you're young. And I think you'll agree, because we're older now, Patsy, that if we they always say, if you had something to do over, would you do it the same way? And with age, of course, comes wisdom. And of course, we say, of course not. You know, when you're 20, what do you really know? When you're 25, what do you really know? When you're 30, do you want the same thing you wanted when you were 40? And a lot of times you just pick somebody and you fall in love very immaturely, and it's really not much of a marriage at all. So to stay where you're just so miserable and you're not happy, even if the gay is not the issue to me, the issue is the quality of life that you have, that you only have one chance to go around down here, and you need that happiness. I think, would you agree with that?
I'm going to surprise you, Bonnie, and I am going to agree with you. And I would recommend if your readers want to explore that topic more, that they get Barbara Roberts' book, Not Under Bondage. She talks about all these incidents of how the Bible actually, she can give you a verse, chapter and verse in the Bible for abandonment, for abuse. These are all scriptural reasons for divorce. And I can just almost guarantee you, from doing this survey on sexless marriages, if there's not enough frequency of sex, not enough quality of sex, these other issues are going on. And if they're not going on right now, the older that marriage gets, it is going to get worse, and there are going to be issues like this. It's you just don't have the hormones going through that you're sharing, that God intended a man and a woman to share, to just keep them bonded close together, emotionally attached to each other through the ups and downs, through the good and the bad, the rich and the poor, the sickness and the health. We need these hormones. This is brilliance, to design these hormones to bless us, to help us enjoy our partner. And from doing this survey and looking at the answers, I just want to shake people and say, you got to solve this problem right now while you are young, because it's going to get worse. And it's going to get so bad you can't even foresee how bad it's going to be, especially after retirement. And these men don't have the distraction of work, the abuse, the emotional loneliness. And one of the things I've seen in the survey is I've had people from age 25 to 80 fill it out. And people never get so old, loving people never get so old that they don't wish that their mate would love them. They just keep hoping for a miracle. And God says, that's a miracle. I'm not going to work. That's something you're supposed to learn for yourself, is how to love your mate. But they just keep hoping something will happen and my mate will realize that I love them and that they will love me. They will be there for me sexually. And something really major has to happen to shake that person up, whether it's a straight-on-straight marriage or straight-on-gay marriage. I just see this over and over in the answers. What I see with the older people on this list that I read you of the emotional damage these marriages do, the older people whose hormones have slowed down don't check as many items emotionally. They're surviving better emotionally. Their feminine or masculine spirit is still crushed, but they're surviving better because their hormones are slowed down. But then they say, I am so lonely. My hormones are slowed down, and I'm not having wet dreams anymore. I'm not having to struggle with that. But the loneliness is just outrageous. It's more than I can stand. So basically, a sexless marriage, the sex part to me is that is just the most obvious sign that there is something really wrong in this marriage. And it's not.
Well,
it's,
I think that,
not,
you know, what I
itself.
Say the difference is also, Bessie, is that when you have a straight marriage, you know, you can have problems that come up. You can have times when you're not, you know, having time to have sex with each other. But you have the initial intimacy there. You have the passion there. And even if you go through bad times, the bad times get better and you can get it again. With these marriages, it was never really there and is never going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And I really do believe that the greatest way a man can show his love for a woman, you know, is to make love to her, is to love her body, is to love her for who she is. It's really an important part of any relationship at any age. I know it's still important for me. And it's not that it's the most important thing, but it sure is something that that it really bonds and cements a relationship. And that you can be old like I am and still have a wonderful time on a regular basis because the love is there. But even when the love's not, you know, there, even if you have to take a break, you can still go back. And I think the intimacy is also developed. But when you have a marriage where, you know, somebody's not there, there's no intimacy. And that's why women are lonely. It's not just for the sexual act. It's also because of the intimacy is missing. And that intimacy is there for you. You know, there was a period of time, you know, that women go through, like I say, illness or whatever the case is. If their husbands can't have sex, then, you know, they have the intimacy that they can draw on. But when you don't even have it to start with and it's never going to be there, that's the lonely part. But I do want to tell people, because time, believe it or not, as always, it goes so fast with you. Patsy's website is wonderful. There's so much information there. And Patsy's so generous in sharing. She has a wonderful newsletter, Embarrass the Alligator. And you can sign up right there for the Alligator newsletter. I get it all the time, and I love reading what she has to say. And she has videos there. Patsy also does, she really does, like, what you mentoring or counseling for Christian couples or Christian women. And, you know, her information there is on her website. You just have to go to patsyraydawson.com. You'll see it on this broadcast once I update it in a few moments. Patsy Ray Dawson, PatsyRaeDawson.com. And you'll see so many wonderful things on here that will make you feel so much better as a Christian woman or just as a woman, you know, when you're talking about, you know, sexless marriage. You can also still take the free, you know, the survey, right? It's still available.
Yes, yes.
It's an ongoing thing. And Patsy always talks about the results of that. So, you know, getting tied in with Patsy, she has her books on here that, you know, will really help you as you're challenged, if you are, as far as being a Christian and getting out of a relationship. Because so sadly, so many women linger. And I say every day you lose to a bad marriage is a day you're never going to get back. You know, I really do believe that life is a gift, and every day that you're given is a gift to take it or to leave it. And too many women just leave it when they have the capacity and the ability to take it. And, you know, maybe our beliefs are different, but I really truly believe that Jesus, is being a kind, loving God, you know, for Christians, wants people to be happy, not to be sad, not to be suffering, not to be miserable, not to be hurting, not to be crying. And that's why he gives you life as a gift. And as Patsy said before, you have the power to either make it good or keep it bad. I mean, you have that power, but a lot of times you just need the permission. So by going to Patsy's website, you know, you can get that permission and you can feel good about it. Wouldn't you say so, Patsy?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, that, you know, I understand as a Christian, you know, I want a verse too. And so I try to document everything with the scriptures and with word definitions so that people's faith is in God's word and not in something that I'm saying, you know, because I can be wrong. But the scriptures, I am just constantly amazed as new medical discoveries and stuff are coming up that we just, you know, like the hormones. That's recent science to understand the hormones. And who knows if we understand all the hormones that are released during sex at this time. But it's right there in the Bible that God wants us to have a wonderful relationship. One thing I would say, Bonnie, is the longer you stay in these marriages, the more damage that is being done to your children. Children as young as 2 years old can be observed becoming codependent or narcissistic. Uh-huh. And I have parents, I ask questions about the children on the survey, the last part of it. And the younger people with younger kids are saying they're doing okay. The parents with teenagers are saying, my son, my daughter, they're starting to have problems. They're starting to pick up the bad attitudes toward women and things like this. You don't always see the damage that's being done to your children until they become teenagers and young adults, and they're more out on their own, and they're not under your guidance so much. So what I tell people is step out of your pain and step into your child's pain. Look at it.
Yeah, and you know what, Patsy? The next show that we do, you know, in a few months, if you'll be kind enough to come back, I really want to talk about the effects this has on children, you know,
okay,
by staying
yeah.
in a bad marriage. So we're going to make that our topic for the next show. But
okay,
I'm sorry,
we have to cut it
because we're going to be cut off now. And I look forward to having you back in a couple months, Patsy. Thank you so much. And to all our listeners, thank you for listening. If you have any questions, once again, write to me, BonK@AOL, and I can hook you up with Patsy in a moment. And go to her website at PatsyRaeDawson.com and hook yourself up. So to all of our women, love to all of you. Patsy, I love you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, and I love and appreciate you too, Bonnie.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.